At about this time, well, what was happening about this time? About this time, King Herod Agrippa. Well, what do we know about King Herod Agrippa? Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? There seems to be quite a number of King Herods. Can you guess how many? Do you know how many? Well, let's do a little who do you think you are type family tree, shall we? Just to try and work everything out. And if I go through the different King Herods, then we will, well, I'll give some reference as to what they were up to as far as the storyline of the New Testament. So first of all, what's the first Herod that we come across? Herod the Great? Yeah, and what was he up to? What do we remember King Herod the Great for? Well, he was around Jesus' birth. And so what do we know about King Herod? Yeah, it's not a very good thing that we can remember him by, is it? King Herod the Great, and what do we remember? Well, he arranged for the killing of a whole load of babies to try and get rid of Jesus, because he was worried that this was maybe the Old Testament biblical anticipated king. And, well, he was the king. He didn't want another king. There wasn't room for two kings. So he wanted to make sure his position was secure. So King Herod the Great, and he had a couple of sons at least. First of all, we come across Antipas, Herod Antipas. What do we know about Herod Antipas? Well, he was around when Jesus' trial took place. That was the Herod. So, father, son. Are we together so far? Okay, father and son. But also, Herod Antipas, what do we know about him? Well, he was the one that John the Baptist lost his head because of this young lady that came dancing before him, his wife's daughter. Well, that makes... you'd have thought maybe the wife's daughter, but this was now his kind of acting wife because it was the wife of his brother. Kind of gets complicated, doesn't it? Like an obscure soap opera, but it is like that. So we have Herod the Great has a son, Herod Antipas, who beheaded John the Baptist and was there at Jesus' trial. His brother, Herod Philip II, and I need to check on this because I was coming here today and thinking, was it Herod Philip, a place name was named after him and so on. But anyway, it might be a bit of a red herring. But his son was Herod Agrippa, our guy in the story. Okay, so we have granddad, Herod the Great. His son is Herod Antipas. And then his nephew is Herod Agrippa the First. Why do I say the first? Because there is a second, and we get the second later on in Acts chapter 25. But what is and that one, Herod Agrippa the Second, in Acts chapter 25, kind of not giving away the story too much, but he ends up being part of the consideration as to what to do with Paul. So back to Agrippa the First. Well, here he starts doing things a bit like his granddad did, a bit like his uncle did, in having someone killed. About that time, King Herod Agrippa seems to be running in the family, doesn't it? This murderous streak. King Herod Agrippa began to persecute some believers in the church. Why was that to his advantage? You see, the king of that time, the Jewish king, well, it was a bit of an awkward situation because they had an occupying nation, army, wasn't there? That's where the Romans were there, and they were really in control, but they kind of controlled the people that were in control. Are we together so far? So the Romans were occupying the land, but he was still king, and you're always kind of vying for position and power and authority and so on. And the emperor Tiberius didn't really like the way that King Agrippa had been behaving for a little while before that. So guess what happened to Agrippa? He gets stuck in prison. And then he became in favor again somehow or another, so he gets out of prison and he's trying to reestablish his authority and control. So what better way to do that, bearing in mind that the king has the ultimate control of the temple, and within the temple, well, the temple represents that whole Jewish faith system, we have this group of people that are Christian people that have come out of this sort of originally thought of as a Jewish sect. So if I'm looking to re-establish my authority, what can I do? I can stamp my authority by dealing with these Christians that seem to be a bunch of problematic people. So that's what he does. Starting with who? He had the apostle James, John's brother, killed with a sword. No explanation. Just that James is now dead. But what do we know about James and John? Ring any bells? Think about when Jesus was walking the earth. Who was James and John? There were some of the 12. Some of those that were handpicked by Jesus. But what do we know about James and John? They weren't the sort of wallflowers of the group, were they? They didn't sort of blend into the background. We have an account in Mark chapter 10 of James and John coming to Jesus and sort of, Jesus, we've got a proposition to make. You know, we're brothers and we can rely on each other and you can rely on us. And, well, Jesus says, well, what are you asking? As though he didn't know. Well, Jesus, you know, when you come into power and authority and so on and establish your kingdom, you're going to need a good right-hand man and a left-hand man, and we're your guys. So how about it, Jesus? But what does Jesus say? He says, can you really go through the kind of thing that I will be going through? And then, not just in a way of a question, but he actually says, actually, yes, you will. You will suffer for the cause. And here we have a proof that Jesus wasn't wrong. James loses his life because of his faith, because of the king wanting to establish his authority. James is dead. Verse 3, when Herod saw how much this pleased the Jewish people. What does that make him? A people pleaser. A people pleaser. Now, I don't want to get into lots of politics and so on, but maybe we can think of politicians who, current or past, we think maybe are just people pleasers, not taking the responsibility of their authority and leading as they should, but looking to gain favor. But that was Herod Agrippa. And since he gained favor from getting rid of James, he's on a roll. Why not go after another? Why not get one of the big fish? As though James or John wouldn't have been big fish, but who does he go after next? Are you following? Don't believe it just because the preacher says it. Acts chapter 12 and verse 3, he comes after Peter. And he took hold of Peter, at least not personally, he would have arranged this. He gets hold of Peter, and it's around about the time of the celebration of the Passover, and Peter ends up in prison. Do we know anyone else that during Passover ends up being taken away? Jesus. Jesus. And why at the Passover? Why is the Passover so important? Well, this is a major Jewish festival. In fact, it's a series of festivals that go on at this time. It's festival season. And they're all coming from different parts around the empire and further afield. Anyone who was Jewish, you'd make your pilgrimage and you'd go to Jerusalem and you'd be part of the festivities there. So if you're trying to establish or re-establish your authority so that everyone would know, all the Jewish people, King Agrippa is our man, then that's a good time to do it. But not before the Passover, just in case he's got it wrong. I mean, he wouldn't want to have blood on his hands because that would mean make him ceremonially impure, and this is a big ceremony, so he just waits a little bit. Just waiting a little while longer. So he has Peter arrested. He's in prison. He's under guard. Has Peter had this experience before? I know this is going to take lots of weeks for us to get through the book of Acts the rest of the year. And I know that we've covered a lot of it so far, and there's so many bits of story, but can you remember in Acts chapter 5, Peter and John, remember? I kind of did the little song ditty thing. Peter and John went to pray. They met a lame man on the way. And then all the bits of story that came after that, it ends up with Peter and John being in prison. And what happened that time? There was an angel that came and released the door. And Peter and John come out of prison. And then they're told, go to the temple and continue proclaiming. Which seems like a silly idea, doesn't it? You know, they got me the first time. I'm not going back there. But actually, maybe that's what God calls us to do sometimes. To jump back into the fire. So Peter has been in prison before, and Peter has experienced a release from prison before. And I wonder if that had some kind of effect on his behavior. He's in prison, but this time, we're not told in Acts chapter 5 that there are any other prison guards, just that the door was locked. But this time, it seems as though the king's not going to take any chances. How many guards? 1, 2, 3, 4. How many? 4 lots of 4? Is that what it says in your Bible? How many is that? A little bit of Sabbath morning, Sabbath afternoon there. Sabbath afternoon mathematics. What's 4 fours? 16. 16 guards. Two of them chained to Peter. They really don't want him to get away. Whatever happened last time, it caused us some problems. So we're really making sure that we're not taking any chances. But what happens with Peter? Shackled to 2 guards, other guards around, various gates and so on locked. It says that he's imprisoned. But verse 5, the church prayed very earnestly for him. What happens when a church prays for people? And where were they praying? Seemingly in at least one location. We'll come to that location in a little bit. But they were praying. And when churches pray together, things happen. Verse 6 says that, Peter was a bit anxious that night before his trial, wasn't he? Or does your Bible say something different? Now, many years ago at a summer camp, there was a bunch of us lads, and of course the malarkey that those that are in their late teens would get up to, even if you were on the staff. And there was someone that was in bed, just remembered who it is, but someone was in bed and they wouldn't get out of bed, and I had this quite big music system, and there's a particular song by the group Pink Floyd called Time, and right at the beginning there's this tick-tock, 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 and it kind of builds up, and then it was a real thing that they did. They recorded all these clocks in a clock shop, and they set all the alarms to go off at the same time, and that's what you get on this song, the beginning of the song, all these alarms. So I got this all queued up on my music system, and tick-tock, 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 tick, and when I knew that it was just about to ring the alarm, I pushed up the volume, and it really, he was absolutely dead to the world, and it did startle him, I must admit. It would anyone. But this is Peter's trial the next day. Is he sleeping shallow, or is he deep asleep? Well, it seems as though he's deep asleep, isn't he? Because what does it say that the angel has to do? Yeah, well, he didn't have the music system and a bit of music to wake him up. But it says that the angel struck him on the side to waken him. Man, that is a deep sleep. That's a deep sleep. Wake up. Wake up. My son is now 21 years old. He's still back from uni at the moment, going back in a week or so's time. And he kind of keeps all sorts of funny hours. And to try and see him waking up in the morning and going off to work is hilarious. And trying to wake him is like waking the dead. But I kind of get this picture as though Peter, he's definitely not a teenager at this time. But Peter, he's fast asleep, and he gets this, come on, Peter, wake up. And what does the angel tell him? What does the angel tell him? Get up, get dressed, stick your shoes on, grab your coat, let's go. Yeah, that kind of teenager response.
Leave me alone.
But Peter kind of, what's going on? Oh, it's the middle of the night. So he gets up, he gets dressed, he puts his sandals on, grabs his coat, and what does it say? All along, he thinks he's in vision, he's having a dream. Have you ever had a situation where you thought, what would be great now is, if this happened in my life now, this would be, and maybe you go to bed with that kind of nice warm thought and you have these dreams that, that would be so good. Kind of imagine that that's maybe like Peter. And he's just as though this is a dream. Yeah, this would be great. And imagine, clink, clink, the shackles fall off me and they're still asleep. And then I'd creep out with the angel and past the guards, and the gate would go open like it did last time. And then what does it say? The angel disappeared. And it says that Peter came to his senses. This same phrase we get in a story that Jesus told. You know what the story is? Someone who suddenly came to their senses. Prodigal son. Yeah, Luke 15 says that he suddenly comes to his senses. That's what it is. Here's Peter. He suddenly realized this isn't a dream. This is really happening. What does it say of the church, what they were doing? They were praying for Peter. And suddenly, on the night, this shows you about God's timing. God could have brought him out a few days before, couldn't he? You know, just relieve Peter and the believers of a few nights of late nights praying. But sometimes God needs to take us to the edge to see if we really believe him, if we really trust him. Peter goes. Where does he go? I mean, if you were a free person, that's just happened to you, what would you do? Be leg it out of town, wouldn't it? But no, he goes to what he thinks may be a safe place. But of course, maybe it's not, because they would have been known to have been Christian believers. But he goes to this place, and as he goes there, he starts... coming back to my kids again, they watch a program. I haven't seen it on telly, once the other day, but only one episode. But I don't know if any of you have seen this series called, I've forgotten what it's called now, The Big Bang Theory. Big Bang, yeah. Some people rolling their eyes and heads and so on. It's one that I kind of barely tolerate and slightly get irritated by, but it has various characters in there, and I can't remember this one. Someone is going to say his name, but he goes across the corridor regularly, and it's kind of a habit thing of him. Sheldon, yeah, and isn't it Sheldon that goes across, and he's Penny. He keeps sort of repeated knocking on the door. Penny, because Penny lives opposite. Penny. Well, here we have Peter. Rhoda. Anyone there? And eventually, guess what happens? Rhoda comes. And she recognizes Peter's voice. Now, a little bit of Greek for you. Do you know what a dendrologist is? Study of what? Dendrologist studies trees. There you go. Dendrologist studies trees. And maybe you're already working out where I'm going with this. Do you know what Rhoda means? Rhoda's a Greek name. But Rhoda means rose. So, you know, we have these plants called rhododendron. You heard of rhododendrons? Pretty, you know, a few months' time they'll all be out in bloom. Rhododendron, what does it then mean in Greek? Rhoda means rose. Dendron means tree. So what does it mean? A rhododendron is a rose tree. Huh. Okay, moving on. There you go. A bit of free horticultural information for you. So Rhoda is the one that answers, at least she doesn't open the door, but hello, it's the middle of the night, who is it? Rhoda, it's Peter, open the door. Peter? She goes running off, what does she do? Hey guys, we've been praying for Peter, and guess who's at the door? Peter's at the door! What was their response? You know, I used to take someone up, pick this young lady girl up when I lived in Northern Ireland and take her up to Belfast to the youth club up there. And then whenever the youth club was finished, it would be another 45 minutes or so to drive back home. realizing that I know there's one or two people here will know this person. But she would sit in the car and chatter on the way home. And it was late, and I would just kind of guess in my mind, when is it that she's just going to start chattering rubbish? Because she's so tired, but she's chatter, and it would be total rubbish sometimes, but she's still talking, as though she's talking in her sleep, but she's still arm-drawing, and it's just funny. And I kind of imagine that maybe this is, Rhoda, have you had enough sleep? Are you hearing things or something? It's not Peter. But what do they say it is? Maybe it's an angel. An angel with Peter's voice, as though that's any less dramatic than Peter actually standing there. But what were they praying for? What were they praying for? Peter. And now Peter's standing at the door. And no one's answering. And then when they do, And they let him in. Well, I mean, before they do, what did it say? Peter's still standing there. Penny, Penny, Rhoda, Rhoda. You know that song? I know, because I've got to weave in a song somewhere, haven't I? You know that song? It's written, sung by a number of different people, and I say written, they don't quite know. Different people say that they wrote it, but the song, I keep on knocking, but I can't get in. See, we've one song title in somewhere. That was Peter. He kept knocking. He couldn't get in. And then eventually they let him in. He said, Peter, what happened? Peter said, let me tell you the story. When a church prays, amazing things can happen, but we need to believe that they will happen. And then he says, tell James. Tell James what has happened. Which James? I think that there's a reason at the beginning of our chapter that it says James, the brother of John, so that we know that there's a distinction as to which James. James, the brother of John, is the one that was killed by a sword. But then he says, tell James, because James, the brother of Jesus. Tell James. Why tell James? Why tell other people? Why say, look, you guys, why don't you go and tell the other believers that I'm okay? Because it's good to reassure each other. It's good to tell our stories to each other, to encourage each other. The sun came up the next morning. And what happened? Well, yeah, you'll probably have your own expression in your mind, but everything went bananas. Everything went crazy. Why did it go crazy? Can you imagine being one of the guards? Presumably that they were sleeping, kind of waking up. Realizing you've got a chain and Peter's missing. And then maybe being one of the guards out by the gate or at the station points and waking up. Did anyone see that I was asleep? And then hearing the guard that was chained to Peter, he's gone, he's gone. There was a commotion. And what is ordered? Well, the king says, search for him. Go get him. Find him. Like some sort of villain on a James Bond film. Find him! So the search is on. Did they find him? No, because in verses before it says that Peter left that place. What was the name of the place? Where, whose house did he go to? I didn't mention this, did I? He went to Mary's house. Who was Mary? Well, Mary was, because there's loads of Marys, a little bit like James, but loads of Marys. Mary, the mother of John Mark. Okay, remember earlier on in Acts, we have people's names dropped in because they're going to reappear later. The mother of John Mark. But Peter's gone. What happens with these guards? Well, it's not a good day for them because they are sentenced to death. You've not fulfilled your duty. But what happens to Herod? He was trying to establish his authority, and this is rather embarrassing. So he's going to go to the coast. Because that's what rich and famous people do. So he goes to the coast, but where does he go? Caesarea. Have we been to Caesarea before? Yep. Because that's where Philip went to after he met the Ethiopian. That's where Peter went to and brought the good news of salvation to the centurion and his family and so on. It's where all sorts of people have been to. Now Herod goes there too. And then we get a little bit of a story about what happens with Herod. And we get a hint of something that we referenced before. You see, when Barnabas and Saul came down from Antioch, what did they bring? It says in a previous chapter that there was a famine going on, so in Antioch the believers had a whip round and they sent some money with Barnabas and Saul in order to sustain the other believers in Jerusalem. And here we get this hint of this famine going on, because in Tyre and Sidon it says that they were dependent on Herod and his people and his land and so on, and his country for food. So sure enough, there's this hint of there was a famine. It was a difficult time for provisions. So they come, ask for an audience to Herod, listen to what he has to say, and then what do? They butter him up, don't they? Oh, wow, that was amazing, King. Oh, we really like what you have to say. In fact, that was so amazing that we think you must be a deity. We think that you must be God more than a king. So what does Herod do? It seems as though he accepts that accolade. What did Peter and others do when they say, in what we've read before and what we'll touch on when we get to it later on in Acts, where people say, well, Peter, this is amazing, you must be God. And he says, no, that's not me, I'm not God. This was not me, this was God's power. And he deflects that accolade to God rather than accepting it. But that's not what Herod does. Herod's kind of like, ha, you know what? I like the sound of that. Me a deity. Oops. Suddenly he's afflicted with illness and dies. He's not a good king. Meanwhile, here we are near the end of our chapter. Meanwhile, back at the ranch. Meanwhile, the word of God continued to spread. But I thought that there was continued persecution. Doesn't matter. When you have the good news of Jesus, the word continues to spread. And there were many new believers. Then we have a transition verse. Some bits picked up from the story so far and ready to launch us into the next half, metaphoric half, of the book of Acts. When Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission to Jerusalem, remember I've just mentioned they came from Antioch, they came down to Jerusalem. Seemingly they were in Jerusalem at the time when this happened to Peter. Were they at Mary's house? Maybe, maybe not. But maybe they were, because Barnabas and John Mark are cousins. We know that from Colossians 4, verse 10. So maybe he was at Auntie Mary's house and Peter came knocking at the door. Or maybe he was with James in another group. We don't know, but he was there in Jerusalem. So for the kids that might have been listening, that's a detail that maybe was the case, but maybe not. It doesn't matter one way or another. But when Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission to Jerusalem, they returned. Where were they returning to? We get a clue in the next verse, but we'll come to that another week. But it is Antioch. They returned to Antioch, taking who? John Mark with them. Who was John Mark? Yeah, go on, say it. The son of Mary. Yeah. Yeah, state the obvious. John Mark was the son of Mary. John Mark was the author of Mark. Suddenly things tie together. And here we have the end of Peter. Well, it's not the death of Peter, but up until now, a lot of the stories we've had this character, Peter, coming in and out of the stories. And from here on, we have a different focus. The main character becomes Saul/Paul. Before, in the future, coming weeks, we'll look at Saul's stories more and more now. But let's just do a final recap as we finish this talk today about Peter. What do we know about Peter? Well, he was a businessman, self-employed fisherman, working alongside his colleagues, maybe in a few other boats, and he responded to the call of Jesus. Follow me. Follow me. Did he know it all yet? Well, Jesus said, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and die. And Peter says, no, you're not. And Jesus says, yes, I am. Get behind me, Satan. You are not going to stop me from the purpose that I came to this earth to deal with. And then Peter says to Jesus, hey, I'm so much of a follower. I'm going to stand up for you no matter what. And Jesus says, I'm sorry to tell you, but even tonight you're going to deny me. Cock-a-doodle-doo. It came true. But then Jesus says, some days later, Peter, if you love me, feed my sheep. And that's exactly what he does. He stands up on that day of Pentecost with boldness and says to these other people, this same Jesus who you crucified, he's our Savior. He's our man. This Peter is the one that was in that dreamy state wishing for his lunch. And he says, eat of these animals that are in the sheep. No, that's not me. I don't eat that kind of food. Oh, this isn't an issue of food. This is an issue of inclusion. This Peter was the Peter who had so many different Jesus experiences that developed his faith bit by bit, that he was able to fall asleep in that prison cell the night before his trial, probably preempting that this is the end of his life. He was able to sleep well because he had Jesus in his life. So at this stage of our book of Acts, I simply want to encourage you, sleep well because you have your faith in Jesus. Father in heaven, we thank you, not just that we have the opportunity of waking up to a new day and coming to this place of worship, but we have the freedom to read through these stories, to spend enough time to reflect and see how they knit together. So Lord, as we come to a stage in the sequence of stories through Acts, where Peter seems to drift off the scene a bit, Lord, may we learn from his life and his story, that we may not have the full facts, we may not have that certainty of faith like he ended up with, but whatever it is, whatever level of faith that we have, you still call us like you called him. And when you call us, you continue to teach us. And as you continue to teach us, you give us your Holy Spirit that we can share that good news with others too. So Lord, help us to be at least a little bit more like Peter, to receive your Spirit, to have that fearless faith, and to sleep well at night, because we know that we have you in our lives. These things we ask in your name.